somewhere in the Houston Midtown area. It's The Sit Down with Slick Vic.
Welcome, everyone. It's The Sit Down with Slick Vic, coming to you live from the infamous Parkland West in Alief, Texas, the neighborhood that I grew up in, and the neighborhood that my current guest grew up in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Eric Espinoza, a.k.a. Crook. Thanks for coming on the show, buddy.
Hey, what's up, Victor? How you doing?
Good, good. Well, you know, I've known you for a long time. You know, yes, we grew up in the same neighborhood, but, you know, those people out in the world don't know too much about you. So you grew up in Houston, but you weren't born in Houston, correct?
Correct.
Where were you born?
I was born in Cameron County, Texas.
Where the hell is that?
I have no idea.
Never went back.
I never went back. I just know I was born there, and my birth certificate says Cameron County, Texas, and that's it.
Nice, nice. So what brought you to Alief?
Well, I was born in Cameron County, then we went to Northeast over there, Aldi Mail Route, okay. Pre-K. So I remember that. So after pre-K, we went to Southwest. I was just going to Smith Elementary, Smith Sharks, first grade, fifth, up to fifth, you know what I mean?
And then you were like me. You went to the infamous Ali Middle School, correct?
I went to Ali.
Ali Owls. Ali Wood.
Well, my generation was 1990-91 is when I went to Ali.
Oh, yeah. You are a little bit older than, you're like, about five, I think, 5 years older than I am.
I'm 42.
Yeah. Yeah, about 5 years on me. Mm. So talk a little bit about how it was at that time growing up in Alief, in Parkland West, I guess in the late 80s for you.
Well, throughout my elementary years, you know, everything was like 80s. You know what I mean? Like you watch movies about the 80s and that's how it was. You know what I mean? But you know, so up to fifth grade, sixth grade, it was like skaters, you know, always wanted to be a skater. I thought skating was like, really
that was
cool.
Already big in the '80s.
Yeah, it was pretty big. And, so from Smith Elementary, I went to Ali. So it was like, that's where never the shit hit the ceiling, you know?
Why is that?
What? Transitioning to middle school.
Which, yeah, that could be a little
you
tough.
Know, it was older people, but everything was gangs. Everything was gang related. You know, SWC and BD was the two biggest gangs that I knew growing up, watching these gang fights every day in middle school, straight from elementary. So that was a trip for me.
You know, I remember when I was growing up, definitely there was gangs around, but I think by the time I started growing up, it was dying down a little bit. But I know during your time, it was a little bit bigger. Were you ever like curious or tempted to kind of go down that gang life?
Really, what it was is that when I got there in sixth grade, my homeboy Omar, we call him Flaco, he took me in. He saw me in the hallway. He was like, "Come here, little brother." You know, in Spanish, he was like, "Come, canalito, come here," and I guess they were cholos because the way they dressed, khakis and you know, everything was gangstered out. And I stuck to his side, but it was a race war. It's like you got to pick your side of race. It's like if you were in jail, it was weird because, you know, there was fights every day, you know, black versus Mexicans. That was a way of life. It didn't make me, you know, want me to join a gang, but I was like forced to be like, hey, do I got to be tough out here? You know what I mean? I can't act weak because look what I see. You know, do I have to be tough? So, and it was. I had to grow up to be tough because the environment was tough already.
So it kind of helped shape, mold who you are today,
basically,
right?
You know, I had no choice because I've been in this neighborhood. I grew up in this neighborhood and elementary, then going to middle school, Ali. 6th, 7th, and 8th, 3 years, that was just pure gangster shit.
Was the main issue and beefs, was that mainly like a racial thing, like blacks versus Mexicans, right?
Gang, yeah. It was a lot of black versus Mexicans. It was gangs. A lot of Mexicans didn't like cholos. Cholos was the number one hated gang. But I wasn't part of a gang. I was from Parkland. I've always said, you know, my neighborhood is Parkland. That's where I'm from. That's my set.
Right. And that's kind of the way it should be, right? No, everyone should be proud of where they're from, right? Everyone should be proud of their neighborhood. You gotta love thy neighbor, right? Like,
yes, sir.
That's where it starts. Mm. You know, if you got beef in your own hood, like you're just gonna have a shitty time, right? Mm-hmm. You're gonna not enjoy coming home and have to worry about your neighbors and all that. Talk about a little bit about how the diversity of A-Leaf kind of maybe that played a role, right? And you not kind of falling into that bullshit, that racial tension, because, you know, you were surrounded by Black people and Asian people, Indian people. Like, we have so many different cultures here in A-Leaf.
Yeah. Middle school, it was Black and Mexicans. That was it. There was really a couple of Orientals and a couple of white dudes, but that wasn't really like diversity as much as when I got into high school.
Okay.
You know, when I went to high school, that's just when those Orientals, I started seeing more Orientals. The Orientals hung out in their little corner, and the whites, and everybody hung out with everybody. But, you know, like true, like people that like immigrants, like, you know, the Nigerians and then the Orientals and the Mexicans, they all had their own clique. But, you know, everybody hung out with everybody. My best friend is Black, so I was just hanging with people that I grew up with from elementary, right, and middle school and high school. So
Ollie Middle School, Smith Elementary, and then high school. Where'd you go, Elsick or Hastings?
Hastings
that's,
South.
That's very unfortunate. That's
very Hastings Bears.
Go Rams. Of course.
You a Ram?
Yeah, of course, man. I wouldn't just say go Rams for no reason. And
really?
Just to clarify, you know, there's a huge rivalry between Elsick and Hastings. I mean, those schools are literally right next to each other, and they share like the annex building. So,
ooh, yeah. Annex building. Hey, you know what? The remember that cheeseburger, the bacon burger that was at the annex?
Oh, you know, yeah. Like the annex used to have like better food, right? Than like the other buildings.
Yeah. What happened is that I used to skip and I just go to the annex just to get that burger, bro. You know, it was a bacon burger. I used to smoke my little bud and shit. I don't know how to say that.
Of course.
Oh, okay.
I'm over here dropping F-bombs, so come on.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, we I used to get smoked out, and we used to just, like, eat the burgers and skip school during high school. So, yeah, I remember the annex, man. That was pretty cool.
So you brought it up, smoking weed. How did that come about? How long have you been smoking?
Man, it first started, I was like, wow, it was like, I was probably like 15, you know, maybe ninth, the summer of eighth grade, going into ninth. This dude had a joint. I forgot who had a joint. I don't know. We used to hang out with Robert Ramirez, some homeboys that were bloods.
Okay.
From the other side of Parkland. Those, you know, they were older than us and they had access to weed. And also Tito, Alex's brother, rest in peace, Alex, and his brother Tito. So they were older than us. So they already had like weed. One day, they pull out a joint. I smoked it, and I hit it, but I wasn't really high until I smoked a Swisher.
Ooh, you got blunted, huh?
when I first smoked a Swisher, that's when I really got high. I remember that, because the joint was like, it didn't do nothing to me, but when I smoked a blunt, that made me into a smoker, and, man, I was young, man. I was just
so was it like peer pressure or
hell no? It was just for fun, because, you know, we always want, you know, growing up, you start being curious about certain things. Like, first started, you know, a cigarette. Like, you used to see it in the movies and you want to try it. Like, what the hell is this cigarette?
Oh, you wanted to be cool.
I wanted to be cool. So I wanted to try a cigarette. So after a cigarette, I wanted to see what a beer could do.
I get you, man. You know, it's funny you say that. I'm kind of the same way. I remember the first time I smoked a joint, but it was like way later in my life. I was like 17 or 18. I was in Austin, and I used to think it's a mind thing. I was like, nah, man. You're like, all my buddies were smoking, and I was like, nah, like, it's a mind thing. Like, if you smoke, you can control it. So I think the first time I kind of just bullshit puffed it. And it like you, it didn't really do shit for me, but it wasn't until until I smoked a blunt in this very location. We are here. I had a shed in the corner over there, and me and my buddy, we used to hang out every day after school. This is like senior year in high school. And I just remember him going, he used to always fuck with me. He used to always be like, just try it, just try it. And I'd be like, no, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I've already tried it. It didn't work. Mm. I told him, he was like, you know, just try it. If you try it, I will never ask you to do it again. Mm. And so I tried it. Oh my God, I got so goddamn high.
Well, how'd you get? Was it a bong or joint?
No, it was a blunt.
It was a blunt. Hey, why? The blunts always will get you.
Yeah, man. Like, I guess it's just because you're inhaling so much smoke, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like that kind of, you know, led me to eventually do many things. But they say it's a gateway. And, you know, for me, I guess it was because. After that, I went and did everything under the sun. But for you, like after you smoked, did that kind of happen? Like after you were like, oh, well, let's see what else this does, or let's see what this does.
Actually, man, it was crazy because it first started with a cigarette. You know, I wanted to see what a cigarette does. And then I wanted to see what beer could do. And then once I found out what beer could do, it was like you were moving up the ladder because you were getting older, and the people you're around, it was peer pressure, because when you got people that you grew up with and they're offering you this and that, and then you're watching them because you're part of your crew. You know, you become who you hang out with. And I basically hung out with my friends, and it's just we all just started smoking and drinking at the same time. It was like a cool thing to do. So it was you could say it was somewhat of a peer pressure. You know, I was young, you know. But then it just started from like beer and then weed. Then after weed, you start working up the ladder, like going into more harder stuff. You know what I mean? So it's like.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely like a little snowball turning into an avalanche, right? It just picks up speed going down the mountain. Talk a little bit about. Like how did when you were in high school, were you getting into any disciplinary problems, or were you like a good kid? Or
yeah, I mean, I was getting into fights in the principal's office and shit with VJ, even VJ Hudak, Red Van's brother, rest in peace. We got in a fight, man, in the office, man. Me and him, VJ.
In the office?
In the office, man.
How did that happen?
We had class together, you know, but I guess he just didn't like it. He was riding bulls during that time, so he used to walk in with his skinny jeans, his Wranglers, and his boots, and we used to get in the fights right there, man. And I don't know what was wrong with me, man. I was getting into fights, you know, smoking in the classrooms, selling 3-4-5s, you know, selling drugs, you know.
So, I mean, that's kind of like the evolution of it, right? You kind of first, you try it. Then you're like, oh, yeah, I like this. You start smoking a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But eventually, like, and I, you know, I kind of, you know, I can relate. I always say that a lot of it was due to the fact of where we were from and who we knew, right? Like, our neighborhood was just flooded with dealers, right? Like, damn near every street had a guy, you know, that had something for sale, right? Did you find that growing up as well?
Yeah, I mean, we used to hang out in my front yard, and people that I grew up with would just post up in my house. We would just hang out, you know, smoke, drink, or whatever to get to your high. Yeah. Whatever they were doing, you know what I mean? They could be X'd out. I was smoking a lot of weed and drinking, you know, but then it started, as time passed, it just started, you know, picking up on stupid things that I shouldn't have done. But you know, it was all learning lessons, you know. We all learn and we grow and move on. But it was dealers everywhere. It was like you're in the mix. I mean, how can you not step out the front door and avoid it because your friend that you grew up with is around it and they bring girls with them. Oof. So the girls really was more so another reason why to even like
pussy temptation, man. It's very strong, very powerful.
And girls were out there, man. Just, you know, just to get, you know, get your hands on a freak.
Yeah,
you know, every week or every day. You know, that was like, you know, women. I love women. You know, hey, I love women.
I mean, it's been the downfall of many men.
It can be, and it has been.
And yeah, I mean, it's all about. I mean, I'm not blaming women, folks. Like, women are awesome, you know. But it depends on what kind of woman, right? Just like it depends on the man, it depends on the woman.
Women are crazy, man.
And they can be helpers, or they can be enablers, right?
And they're crazy. I'm 40. I'm 42 years old. I'm still having heartbreaks over these girls. They're breaking my heart, man. That's why I tried my son. He's telling me he's in love at 18. I'm like, son, stop it. Because when I was 18, I was just.
Has he had his heart broken yet?
Yes. And he never had, you know, made out with the girl. But I told him, I said, hey, man, stop. It's going to happen again. Look at me. They're still doing it to me. You know what I mean? They're heartbreakers, man. I'm telling you, these girls know how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough.
So you're in high school, you know, you're using drugs, you're selling a little bit of weed here and there. What happened after high school?
During high school, I went to boot camp.
Boot camp?
I went to Harris County boot camp.
What was that for?
Well, that was because I was smoking weed on probation.
Oof.
And I hit a cop, and during my high school year.
You hit a cop?
I kicked and pushed a cop because he kneed my brother in the balls. Oof. Over there in the Parkland, on the other side of Parkland.
What were y'all doing?
This is Parkland West, so we were on the other side of Parkland. Well, we were just, we used to break into vacant houses and smoke out the closets. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. We were going, every vacant house we saw, we got inside of it. We found a way to open the window. He's get in there, get drunk, bring girls, smoke out the closets, smoke blunts. You're talking about just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to, one day we got busted walking down the street by this Officer McCord. Always bothered us. We were a big group in Parkland. It was like 20 of us out on the street walking. Well, they pulled us to the side. They said, hey, they checked us. And it was wintertime, I remember, because we all had big NFL starter jackets. And they checked my brother, and they found a bong on him. And once they found a bong on him. Yeah, a green bong. That's my bong, too. So he had it. So, and then once they found the bong, they kneed my brother in the nuts. And when I saw that, I was like, man, I pushed him. I kicked him. I said, get off my brother. And then he started chasing me, and I ran, but he couldn't keep up because I was so young. Right. And I turned back, and I saw I was smoking this dude. You know what I mean? So,
but they caught you, though, right?
But no, I left. I left, and I came back home. I never went to jail. I was just like a tender age of 17. So, and then I went home, and I said, Mom, I said, hey, my Bito isn't going to jail. And the cops have him. And she was like, oh, for real? Let's go. Whatever. We thought the cops were gone or whatever, so I showed up with my mom, and there goes the fucking cops and just grabbed me and choked me and put me in jail for what I've done. And that's when I first time went to Harris County Jail. First I went to Makawa, then I went to jail. And Harris County Jail.
And did what was the reason for going to boot camp today? Was that part of the plea bargain, or what happened?
So I went to jail. They gave me a year of probation.
Which is a trap, for those of you that don't know.
And then before I even saw my PO, I was smoking weed, and she asked me if I smoke weed. And if I do drugs, I go, yeah. And then I took a P-test, and I got locked up for a P-test, and I went to boot camp for it.
Wow.
During high school.
Is it like everything? It's like the military, right? Is that how it is?
When I went there, the sheriffs barely left, and it was a bad name they had. The sheriffs had a name that they were just doing wrong things, like rubbing off people's tattoos with sandpaper.
What?
It was crazy. It was nuts.
Boot camp?
Yeah, boot camp. Yeah, over there at Tascosa Road by the state jail. Yeah, man, they tortured us in there, man. So, Harris County Jail sent me to boot camp while I was in high school, and then it was for a dirty UA, and then it was just straight military soldier stuff. Like, you earn the green camouflage. First, you're looking like Barney because you got these purple shirts with green pants, and they call you the Barney Barracks because, you know, you're just barely brand new. So it was like a 90-day program. And then you work your way up to get that, to graduate and march and have the American flag and salute arms. And it was just straight military people that went to war. So they were already fucked up in the head coming here, treating us all fucked up. You know what I mean?
And after you got out of the boot camp, I mean, well, how did that affect you? Did you feel like, oh, man, I'm tired of this shit, I'm going to change my life? Or were you just like, man, these motherfuckers,
I was 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I got my GED while I was there. But I didn't graduate high school, but I felt like I had to graduate. So I went back to Hastings. I went back to school trying to get my diploma. But when I got there, and all the classes I had, everybody was just younger than me.
Right.
I felt old as hell in that class, in every class, because I was old. I was trying to go back, and I just stopped that, and I started working in the meat department by my neighborhood.
It's called Randall's. You became a butcher.
I became a butcher, man. I decided to drop out and become a butcher.
How the hell did that happen? How did you just become a butcher?
Well, when I got out of boot camp, I knew that, I mean, I was in great condition. I couldn't stop running. So I was running to the other side of the neighborhood. Everything I was doing was running. Exercising was great. Running was just feeling good for me. And so I got me a job at Randall's as a sacker right here on West Belford and Kirkwood. And I was a sacker, and minimum wage was like $4.25 during that time. And then the meat guys used to come pick up the meat that the customers didn't want. So they left at the register. And I got cool with one of them, and I said, hey, dude, how much you get paid an hour? He was like $9. I said, damn, so I'm making $4, and I wanted to make 9 or 10. I'm like, okay. I talked to the manager. I said, sir, I'm 18. Can I get that job position? Sure, you can. Go. You're a good worker. So I was
just
making
like that.
Just like that. So from $4, I went to $7. I thought that was great. I was like, man, that's what's up.
You almost doubled up.
Yeah. So I was like, cool. I'm over here just cleaning the saws. You know what I mean? All the saws, they you know, where you cut the T-bones at and pork chops. I was washing the machine, the equipment, soaking it, then rinsing it. Customer service, they want a quarter pound of beef or a pound of chicken or whatever.
And you never had an issue with cutting up dead animals? That never... Getting the meat and cutting it, the blood, none of that bothered you?
Not really. It was just blood. I've seen blood, you know, and blood was on me.
But, yeah,
you know,
so maybe
there were pieces of cow parts and boxes. That's why I look at it.
Yeah, definitely a good way.
That didn't scare me.
Definitely a good way of looking at it. Okay, so then we did the boot camp. We're cutting the meat up. During that time... when you're doing the you're a butcher, did you kind of leave that life of you know, selling drugs and using drugs after you got a boot camp for a little while, or did you kind of fall back into it as time progressed?
I was a good boy when I got out, but as time passes, I was fucking up.
But you went back to the same neighborhood, right?
I was back to the same neighborhood, back around the same people, same everything, same environment. So I stayed after boot camp. I started fucking up, and I said, just, you know, I was just young, dumb, full of cum. It's just having fun. I wasn't worried about my future, which I should have went to college and got a skill, a degree,
right?
Or run a business, or just educate myself. I didn't educate. I dropped off at 10th grade. You know what I mean? So that was pretty fucked up for leaving me. Not graduating. That felt bad. But I had my GED. You know, so I was right on my GED, trying to just working at meat departments, hopefully to becoming a butcher to get paid a lot. Which really, I was stupid thinking, because being a butcher, you know, you ain't going to get rich being a butcher. You know, you get by, you know, some of the meat managers make $30 an hour. But there was no future in the meat department, man. You can't, you know, there's no way to make a living. At least during that age, my position.
So would it be safe to say that you didn't really have like any aspirations to do anything? You didn't really have goals in terms of like long-term goals, like, oh, I want to do this or I want to do that?
Actually, no. I was just trying to learn being a meat cutter, you know, and just... Movies was my thing. I used to love watching movies and just be a meat cutter and just hang around the neighborhood and buddies and get fucked up.
So you were, you know, you said you got out of boot camp, you went back to the environment, hanging out with your buddies, you know, using drugs and all that. How did that end up progressing, right? You're in that environment. What ended up happening as time progressed?
As time passed, man, you know, you start like getting introduced to harder shit. And then, you know, doing cocaine, you know, and then the girls, the buddies, everybody was just doing drugs, you know. I mean, how can you not? I mean, I just get off work, I get in the car, and people are just getting coked up and just high, whatever the fuck they're doing on X. It was just the thing to do.
Right.
It was just the music during that time that was out. DJ Screw was out. SPM was running the streets. I mean, them two or three was like basically controlling the music waves in Houston, because that's whenever it was, you know, DJ Screw was DJ Screw.
Oh yeah, R.I.P.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, I mean, and also think about what that music was saying, right? Like, it's funny because, you know, I grew up on rap. Mm-hmm. The first tape I ever had was Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style. And, you know, I was really small. I was in elementary. My uncle came down from Chicago because my grandma was tired of his shit. So he sent him down to Houston, and he was here for a little while, and then he left, but he forgot his Sony tape deck with Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style in it, which was like amazing, right? It's a great album.
Yeah, it was.
Then I started listening to rock and roll, and I was really big into Nirvana. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
you know, grunge music in general, and you know, being in A-Leaf, having all these friends, Screw was around, right? You can't ignore Screw. So my buddy, he would always get in the car and play Screw music, and I was like, man, this shit fucking sucks, bro. Like, it's so slow and blah blah blah. I don't, you know. And he would always trick me. He'd be like, oh, let me play just one song, and he would put on June 27th. Oh, and that shit. Motherfucker is like 15 minutes. But the only time I could really jam it was when I was high.
Exactly.
You know, I would be like, man, fuck it, man, all right, light that bitch up, man. We'd smoke a fatty, and all of a sudden, you know, like
smoking music.
Yeah, it was definitely smoking music, definitely an enabler, right? Definitely something that triggers getting fucked up. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Screw talking about sipping syrup. I mean, talk about sipping syrup. Were you sipping syrup when that was a thing?
Yeah, actually, that was
it was cheap back then,
very
right?
Very fucking cheap, because I had homeboys that were having boxes of this shit. You know, what
yeah,
I mean? I'm not gonna name no names. No,
that's
not,
it's not incriminate.
No, we're not gonna put nobody out there. But I had homeboys that right in the back of their car, they had like gallons of this shit, like yeah. Boxes. I'm like, really, fucker, you know, because I guess the system wasn't really catching on yet.
So not anybody, yet, yeah.
So everybody had their access to doctors that give them prescriptions, you know what I mean, and it was just
wide open. Wasn't it
was it? It was wide open. It was like, come and get it, and everybody went to get it. You know, like
I mean, how easy was it to get drink?
Hey man, it was like down the street. You know, I gotta make a phone call, drop it up.
Wasn't there like a pharmacist down the street? I'm listening in Leewood. There was a fucking pharmacist.
It was
right
pharmacist
there?
Everywhere. So basically, an ace was like $10. You know. Now I don't know how much it goes for, but for what I heard, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
You know,
now.
I wasn't really a big sipper, but I did enjoy, you know, having a cup of lean with some Jolly Ranchers, you know, and just fucking just be leaning.
And you brought it up, man. You know, having cases of this shit, cases of drinks, boxes. I knew some of the same people, and. I mean, that shit was insane. And this motherfucker that I knew made the Houston Chronicle. You know, he was in there, got popped for over $1 million of pharmaceuticals. He had pharmacists on the payroll. He had doctors on the payroll. I mean, that was crazy, you know? I mean, I kind of got into that aspect of the game kind of later. I mean, I was still in it early enough to where I had a nurse on payroll. So I had access to prescription pads. She'd be like, give me the name and a birth date and a social, and boom, give me $100 and here's a script, you know, and I'd take that prescription. I'd, you know, fucking run to anywhere, HEB or some just little mom and pop pharmacy, and get those pills, man, get the pills, get the drink. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, we're known you know, fucking the pill capital of the world at that time, right?
The city of drink.
City of syrup.
City of syrup, man. You know. There was just the whole movement of that. You know?
Caught it right when it was popping, though,
man,
huh?
I caught the 80s part of it, too. Remember, when I was in middle school, it was gangster shit, but at the same time, in fifth grade, like, skateboarding was big. So I caught in the middle of the 80s going into the mid-90s and going to the 90s. Late 90s into the 2000s, that's whenever it was kind of big, like in late 98, 97, you know, was kind of where I was introduced to more things. But yeah, I me and you were involved, and it was in the mix. It's hard to be out of there, to not be part of the soup, you know, you're in the sauce. There's no way you were not part of the sauce. You know what I mean? Even though you didn't want to, you were part of the sauce if you lived in Southwest, A-Leaf.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Ranch Houston, comprised of Ashe Yoga and Wellness, The Garden Project, and The Mill HTX, is an intentional, conscious organization created for adults to connect to an inclusive community through art, food, nature exploration, and movement, and for school-age children to empower themselves through education on sustainability and edible gardening. Everyone is encouraged to connect to the curiosity of their inner child as they nurture their nature in a world that so often encourages separation and fear. Minority and veteran-owned, The Ranch Houston is located south of the Medical Center, and you can visit their website at www.theranchhouston.com. I highly recommend it. I've been there. It's awesome. Check it out. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Apparel Up, the leading custom apparel provider in Houston, Texas. They help their customers represent their brand correctly with high-quality, long-lasting custom apparel. Whether you're in need of embroidered scrubs for your medical practice, embroidered polos for your nationwide enterprise, or screen-printed shirts for your sport team, they got you covered. They also do the apparel for my show, so definitely buy some of that stuff too. And you can find their website at apparelup.us. Check them out. You know, I'll tell you one thing, man. I don't know about you, but like for me, yeah, the money was cool. Like I definitely enjoyed having the money. But for me, you know, it was more about the respect. It was more about showing up to the party and being like, oh shit, Vic's here. Vic's here.
Oh shit.
Vic, what you got, man? What you got for me, man? You know, and it was kind of like, I call it like the Scarface mentality, you know, like that lifestyle of being the fucking man, of having everything.
The plug.
Yeah, being the plug. And it's not like, I'm not going to say that I didn't have any friends, that I wasn't a very like super popular kid, but I mean, I was funny, so people liked me. So I don't think I did it because I needed friends or I needed the attention, but maybe it was a little bit because of the attention. I've always been a class clown. Mm-hmm. I've always liked making people laugh. So having that, you know, I guess kind of persona, right, of being the fucking man, that was more of my attraction to it. What was it for you? Was it more of like the friends, or do you kind of understand what I'm saying? Of like, because you get the girls, right? You got the money, like all that comes with it, right?
Man, I was just having fun. I wanted to fuck pussy, get my dick sucked. I wanted to fucking support my drug habit. You know what I mean? I was just having fun. Mm-hmm. I didn't, at 18, 17, you weren't really thinking about bills.
Yeah, that's true.
And shit like that, you know? So I was just chasing pussy and just getting
just chasing
fucked,
that next
chasing
high,
chasing
huh?
pussy and getting fucked up and going to work.
Right.
And do it all over the next day.
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about my future.
It was like a fucking endless cycle, man.
I was having fun.
So as most people who continue this type of destructive behavior, where did this ultimately lead you?
It led me to a bad record and not being able to find a good job, you know? So I started growing up, man, and realizing that, hey, you know, what skill do I have? Am I valuable? I'm still in the meat department. Until my boy Hector got me a job working for a wellhead company. That really changed things up because I left Park Lynn and I went to Katy. And once I went to Katy, I was trying to find meat cutting jobs, but I went to the kitchen. But that right there, that opportunity what Hector did gave me a job working in the oil field. Well, that was my way out the neighborhood, living with my people. It was like 2010. But it was... I had no skill. I had nothing. That life. I had nothing to show for because for so long, I was just chasing this high of like girls and drugs and this and that. But what happens when you get older? You know, yeah. I didn't go to school. So I decided to go to school once I got laid off from that job. I was working at the wellhead. That my boy Hector, appreciate it, Hector. Well, that, you know, all that help you got me to get that job. But once I got laid off that job, I was like, I came home. I was like, damn, I'm a fucking loser. What do I fucking have? No, just a bullshit GED. I didn't have nothing. So I felt it was depressing, man.
What would you say was your ultimate low point from?
Right there.
Right there?
Right there, because I was making, from meat department money, I was making, $300 a week, $400. But when I got that job with Hector, I started making $800, $900 a week, $700, overtime. Well, I was a slave. So once I was making that kind of money, I was like, wow, okay, this is different. This is not meat department money. So when I was making that good money for a few years, I got laid off. And that broke my heart. And then I said, damn, where am I going to go back to? Bullshit meat department? You know? The oil field was doing bad, so everybody was getting laid off. The barrel of oil was under $30, so it was a whole bunch of layoffs. So I was part of it. So I came home. I was like, man, fuck, what to do? What to do? So I was like, fuck it. Let me just go to film school. Let me try to go back and go to college.
Okay.
At ACC.
So what made you choose film school? Like what decided you to pursue that?
Film school was something that was in me since I was a kid. My dad used to take us on trips to Mexico, we used to get hotels, or we would go to, you know, just travel and we get hotels. And my favorite show was HBO, a movie Magic. And they showed how Ghostbusters were made. And it was made by a miniature town. And it was just all toys, Puff Man. And just watching how movies were made. But when you watch a movie, you're so manipulated because of what you see. It looks so real. The story, the way they set it up, the makeup, whatever. That right there was like, wow. So how do they do that? My question is, growing up, I always loved it for some reason. I wanted to be an actor in elementary. But my dad took us to Faces International, me and my brother, to be actors. Rest in peace, Dad. I lost him about a couple years ago. But love you, Dad. So he took us to Faces International when we were elementary. But it was always in me until I said, fuck it, let me just actually do it. And that's when I decided to go and do it, because I love the way how you manipulate what you see when you watch a movie. How in the fuck did they do that? How? The makeup, the blood, everything. You know, it's just great stories, you know, and that was always in me since a kid. Fascinated.
So it was something that you always wanted to do, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And we could say that you kind of got sidetracked because of all the shit going on around you and your friends.
The sauce.
And your
the sauce. I'm going to call it the secret sauce.
But in a way, that serves as like a template, as inspiration, as something that you can use in film, right? Like you've seen things, you've done things, you've been a part of things that not everyone has, that a lot of people haven't, right? Most people, they're like, oh, have you seen this movie about, the shows like The Wire, shows like Sopranos, you know, these shows about drug dealers and murderers and this, that, and, violent things that people don't want to be, but they sure enjoy watching it, right? Yeah. So you wouldn't be able to tell the stories you are going to tell now had you not lived that life, right?
Correct. Filmmaking is something real difficult to do. I thought it'd be a lot easier than that. And
I thought it'd be a lot easier.
I thought about, I wanted to make a movie. I was going to be a good cinematographer. I got it going on. I have the eye. That's what I was thinking, which I do have the eye.
No, but I've seen your work.
No, thank you.
For those of you who haven't, what's your Instagram?
My Instagram is Certified Vision, at Certified Vision, EE Productions.
Definitely check that out, folks. I recommend it. The man does good work. And that just kind of just, like, you didn't practice too much, right? Like you went to school and then you immediately just jumped in, right?
I went to school. I didn't know how to work a camera. I didn't know how to do shit, but go to school, and I met people in there that have cameras. And when I looked at their work on the computer and I saw that picture, I was like, holy shit, dude. I said, this looks fucking professional. I said, damn, I want my fucking pictures looking like this. I said, dude, man, what kind of camera is that? I started asking questions. Then I started learning the software, how you can just paste and cut your own images when you record film on video. You know, it was Premiere Pro. So I was going to ACC for film, getting my associates for it. So I had to learn. I didn't know nothing about computers. I didn't know nothing about cameras, but I just jumped in it because I wanted to learn. So from right there, I just, for me, just meeting people there really got me started, because I wanted to do it bad. I wanted to be a video guy. You know what I mean? I won an award in film school for best short clip or best short film, whatever. I got an award. I was sitting at the house. My first award, and I just got there.
How did that make you feel?
That made me feel good because I got the, it was like an Oscar, man. Whenever I went to the awards, they hold it there for like every you know year that for students that participated and did their work and show their projects. And, you know, you get called up and you're like, hey, you're saying like a little speech. I was all nervous and shit, but still it was cool because that's my heart. I love doing film, you know, and I had a DSLR and I wanted to do a King Sierra. My friend on Facebook was like, I need a photographer, videographer. And I said, hey, I could do your job. What do you need? She said she needed a 15 to be done. I said, yeah, I could do it, which I got my boy, Jesus, I went to film school with, and I saw his work. I used his work to get the job. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So we met up at a Starbucks, me, Jesus, and that girl. She came, and my homeboy, I was like, man, show her the work, man, and we just get to work. And she saw his work. It was not my work. It was not work. I ain't even own a camera, you know. But
you gotta do what you gotta do.
So she said, "Yeah, okay. Well, you're hired. How much will it be?" And I was like, "Holy shit!" I said, "Okay. First King Sierra, first gig. Give me $1,500." And she fucking gave me half of that right then and there. I was like, "Fuck!" I'm like, "Damn, okay." And I got some time to buy me a camera. I was like, "Okay, I got time." I said, "Shit." I started YouTube and saying, man, what kind of cameras does the job? What brand and what it does? And I had to do a quinceañera in like 2 weeks. I had no camera. I didn't know how to use one, nothing. So I just jumped in it. I went to Best Buy and financed it.
You're one of those people. Oh, fuck it. I don't know how to swim. Why don't you jump in the water?
I was nervous as fuck, man. I couldn't sleep because I was thinking about this quinceañera. I don't want to fuck up. You know what I mean? But I had a good partner that could like guide me. So I got me this camera and it was the recent Canon Mark IV. It just released and I needed my lens and it wasn't going to show up on time, but then it did. And I ended up using it for that night. And ever since then, people were like, okay, I want a quinceañera for what they seen.
Now, let me ask you this. When you were learning, did they kind of give you, would you say when you, like you have a good eye, would you say you kind of just freestyled that? Or did you actually go, oh, I need to get this angle. I need to get this angle. Or did you just kind of just go, man, you know what? I like this. I'm going to do this.
My thing is I'm going to do what I want. My angles, my ways. And I have, you know, thanks to LSD when I was growing up trying that drug. LSD brought me to a different level.
So you were around when they had the good stuff,
though. Oh, man. It was some $5 a hit. It was called Blue Shield. We went to Randall's. I was with Daniel, and a couple of the white boys were like, you know, you want to buy some acid? And I was like, yeah, man, how much? $5? Okay. Piece of paper. It was a piece of paper. And I put it in my mouth and let it dissolve, whatever the fuck, eat it. And then, like, 30 minutes later, I didn't feel it. So I went back to Randall's, and I saw him. I was like, hey, man, I want my $5 back, man. You know what I mean? Hey, I don't feel nothing. He looked at my eyes. I was like, nah, man, wait, give it another hour. So I said, all right. So I went home, staying there, and just sitting in my room. And then my mom walks in, and I'm just watching TV, and I just started laughing. I had no control over it. Like, I was like, what the fuck? So I just started laughing. And then I'm pointing to the TV because my mom was like, why are you laughing? And I'm like, Then she just left, and I just started fucking just laughing my ass balls, laughing my ass off, and then laughing my. I mean, it was crazy because the wall was like breathing.
It just started melting, huh?
And not melting, but it was like breathing.
Oh yeah,
LSD. Yeah, so it was like gas. It was fumes. I saw, like, you know, when you pump gas, You see the fumes?
Yeah.
It was like that. And then you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, damn, you're ugly. And the
veins were like,
I mean, very, very noticeable. Very trippy. Yeah, I had plenty of acid trips. That was a trip. But yeah, so that's what gave me my vision, my outlook, because I broke into the other side. You know, I did.
Just like a Morrison, huh?
Yeah. I love that movie by The Doors, by
Oliver Stone.
What?
No, you said you loved that movie and I was just Oliver Stone.
Well, what was that? Who played?
Val Kilmer.
There you go. Awesome movie.
He looks just like him, too.
Hey, I love that movie. Hey, can you believe what was that movie, Rocket Man? Not Rocket Man. The guy from Queen.
Oh yeah. I know you're talking about the guy that played Freddie Mercury.
Yes. Okay. Wow. So you see that movie was good, but The Doors with Val Kilmer.
He killed it, right?
The movie The Doors was so beautiful.
You know, and that's funny. You bring up acid, right? You know, I dabbled with it. You know, I definitely, I don't know how many times I've done it, but it's been definitely at least over a handful of times. And you know what they, I think they say, after three trips of acid, you're legally insane, right? And I don't know how true that is. I mean, I don't think I'm insane. I've definitely done it more than three times, but I definitely don't see everything the same way. I think you're right. When I kind of dabble in videography and photography as well. And I remember one of my first photo shoots, I was with some, me and like three other guys, but these guys went to school. They went to U of H, like they had degrees in this shit. And I, of course, didn't. I'd never taken a class on this shit. And, you know, we got like two models. We're at this place. They were, you know, taking pictures. And they pretty much, because they went to school for it, they pretty much were kind of doing a lot of the same kind of shots, some of the same angles. And I was like, man, I'm just gonna do whatever. And you know, I'm on my belly taking crazy shots, doing all sorts of, because I've seen through the hallucinations, I've seen what can't be produced in the real world, right? Because when you're on acid, what you're watching is not the real world. It's this hallucination that's happening. And just like movies are not the real world. Movies are an illusion. And we kind of have a little heads up on these people, right? Because we've been there. Like, we've been in a movie. Mm-hmm. We're tripping balls, man. Mm-hmm. That shit's crazy. Like, I've had some pretty bad trips where I thought I was in hell, or I thought I was in another dimension. Yeah. You ever have a bad trip?
Yeah, I had a bad trip. It was making me laugh for like 10 minutes. I couldn't stop. I mean, I
was... To the point where it was kind of hurting, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't stop. Everything was just laughing, laughable. I mean, I didn't want to laugh, but it just forced me to laugh for a good 10 minutes. And then it went away, but then it was like 8 hours. So that was just like, everything's a fucking movie. It was just... a dimension that it's like not, I mean, you're sober and then you're just on acid. It's just a complete different world because, you know, you're more like aware, like your senses are just like.
Yeah, you're buzzing. You're buzzing. Your eyes are all dilated. Your
mind is controlling. It's like you're trying to control minds. It was like more of a mind thing.
It's almost like it's unlocking like a hidden door in your brain, right? And you're kind of just peeking in, like, hey, what's in here? And it's just, yeah, I completely agree. So you did the quinceañera, kind of your first gig. What happened after that? Did you end up getting some more gigs? How did that your career start growing?
Yeah, I got a couple of quinceañeras after that. After my first one, she liked it, and then she wanted me to do her wedding. But before the wedding, I did another quinceañera that was decent, and I still use my homeboys. Actually, we used my first gig that we both did together. I did the video, he did the pictures, and he edited and everything. So the second job, I was like, come on, man, let's do it. I got another gig. Let's go. So we did another quinceañera. Then I did her wedding. So when I did the wedding, after that, it slowed down a bit because I wanted to do more video. But then nothing was – it was kind of slow. But I have a video camera that takes pictures. So I was thinking, like, you know, what the fuck? No video work's coming in. Hey, let me become a photographer. Let me buy a speed light. Let me take pictures. And then that is whenever I got a little bit more exposure and people starting to see, you know, who Eric is, Certified Vision is, because I decided to be a photographer from a video guy to pictures, you know. And I mean, the camera was just sitting there. I was not using it. I was like, fuck. But a speed light was like $400. And I was like, man, fuck it. If this is what it's going to take to get me more money, respect, I'll get it. So I ended up buying two of them, $400 a piece, speed light from Canon. And then from there, I started just showing people my work, like photography. And I want, and it was Screwfest on Facebook. They were like, hey, we need photographers. We need videographers. Show us your work, this and that. So I gave them a message, gave them a few pictures. They didn't say this. They didn't say nothing. They ignored me for a while, but then I started taking more pictures and I started, you know, just feeding them my pictures. And then one day they were like, come on, here's your ticket. You get a free ticket to get in. You could be on stage and you could take pictures and videos for us. I said, cool. Wow. They ain't without getting paid. So now I'm on the stage with Lil Kiki, ESG, Lil Flip, and Big Pokey. You know what I mean?
I'm H-Town legends.
Exactly. So I'm on stage with these dudes and I'm like, shaking hands with Papa Roo, you know, he was with Cash Money, you know, Lil Wayne, and I met Papa Roo on stage. And then I took pictures that night and I did a little bit of video. I met Lil Flip. I met all of them. I was on stage, like, you know, I was just tapping them on their shoulders. That's how close I was to them, you know. So I decided to fix the pictures and send them to the people that hired me, Victor, that threw a Screwfest. And then I did a video. Just because I didn't expect to make a video out of it, but I took video of it, of the concert.
Might as well, you're there, right?
Yeah, just to document it. And then when I came home and I said, you know what? Let me fucking put this shit together. Let me put this thing together. Let me see what I could come up with. And then once I put that video up and I put it on Instagram, people started reaching out to me and saying, hey, okay, what's up? You're good. I said, damn. I didn't expect that because, you know, nobody knew who I was until I did Screwfest. When I did Screwfest, that's when people started reaching out to me, and then I started meeting different people like Hiati. He was working for 97.9. Now he ain't on there right now. That's my boy, put me on a lot of concerts. We used to go, any artists that were in Houston, Hiati was linked in. I wanted to get with Travis Scott. He was really hard to touch and get to because that's Travis Scott.
Right.
But in Houston, like, you know, the locals, you know, that we know, like Maxo Cream. I was on stage with Maxo Cream, D Flowers. I met Ray J from Kim Kardashian, the one who made the movie. I even met the mayor. I mean, it was just from Kiati because he seen my work in that video I did for Screwfest.
You know, it's funny you say that you see this thing on Facebook, Screwfest is about to happen. You submit some photos. You don't hear shit from them. But you weren't deterred. You weren't put back. You were like, you know what? I like doing this. I'm gonna keep doing it. And you kept on sending the photos. And look what happened. Like they ended up calling you and be like, hey man, you got good work. Come on.
Yeah.
It was that drive, right? You just had that passion, and that's what it takes, right? The only way you're gonna get big is you gotta want it. And you had to show them, like, hey, I want this. This is what I want to do. And do you even, like, when you're doing it, it's not work, right? Like, you're enjoying every moment, aren't you? I mean, you were fucking on stage with your heroes.
Man, it is not work. I'm just hanging out, snapping pictures and doing a video. I'm having fun. That doesn't feel work. Well, unless when I get home and I got to edit it.
Oh, the editing.
The
just
editing
sucks
is,
ass,
you know,
right?
I mean, you ain't going to pay nobody to do your work, your shots, you know. So you start picking your angles and do your own editings. And that's what I do right now. But yeah, it's not work at all to me. It's just fun. It's playtime to me.
So you did Screwfest. That's what kind of put you on. I'm assuming what kind of opportunities, what kind of doors did that open up for you?
When I did Screwfest, I got plugged in with the people that threw the Screwfest. So he asked me to do other gigs, like open mic check shows. And then he asked me to come out to the address and take pictures of gates. And he just started telling me, hey, come over here and come over there. At the same time, Kiati, I was friends with him because of Sam, Super Sam, the one Exclusive Furniture, the one that said where no place to live. Yeah, he has like 8 stores in Houston, big old stores. And I went to high school with him, but I reached out to him on Facebook and I was like, hey, man, you know, let me do some work for you, man. Let me show you what I got. I got a drone. I just got one. Let me use it. And that was an opportunity that really opened up more doors, too. He was like, come on, do what you can. So I went to his store. He gave me an opportunity. I did the drone work. Then he started hiring me to do family photos. Now I'm part of his marketing team. You know what I mean? I'm there doing like little shots of his furniture.
Promotional work.
Yeah, stuff like that for his Facebook and Instagram, social media type.
Now, that's obviously a little bit different than doing like, you know, music videos or, you know, shooting concerts and stuff like that. But it still kind of helps the eye, right? It still kind of helps you. It's a different element, but it still kind of helps you in your overall development as a photographer and a filmmaker, right?
It's all experience,
right?
You know, and no matter what job it is, whatever photography it is, whatever video it is, I'm gonna go for it. I'm not gonna turn it down.
Now, let me ask you this, man: if you don't find your love of photography, videography, if you don't go down that path, where do you think you end up?
I hope not the meat department. I don't want to go back to the meat department because, you know what, you know, I'm on stage with these artists like Maxo Cream. Like I said, that was so cool. And just going back to meat department, even though I like cutting meat and that's cool to me, knowing my cuts of meat and then I can go to a, like, you know, a butcher shop and I could pick out the best steaks that I see. Most people just pick that out. I don't know. But me, I do what I like.
You got the experience.
Yeah,
you
know, and I don't know. I'm not going to stop because I got some more equipment coming in because one day I want to make a movie. That's my whole goal is to make a film, short film.
And you brought it up. That was going to be my next point. Like what is the future goals, the 3-5-year plan? So you mentioned you want to make a movie. Full length, short film. What do you want
to
do,
man? To be honest, man, I thought it'd be a lot easier before I went to film school. I was thinking, yeah, you go there and press a button, record, and that's it.
It's a whole different animal, isn't
it? It's like mechanics. You know, you're gonna go to a mechanic to fix your car because you can't really do everything in the car.
Exactly.
You know. Exactly. But I like that. I like mechanics, but. So same thing with filmmaking. You got to know the camera. You got to know the lights. You got to know the
audio.
That's why you see the credits.
So many people.
Because that's what it takes to make a movie. You know, investors, you know, where are you going to get the money? Everything's fucking cash to make a movie.
You got a point. I mean, I remember the first short film that I shot. I mean, that thing was like, I don't know, like 4 minutes long, but it took 2 days to do 4 minutes of video because we didn't know. Like I didn't know. And I had some pretty knowledgeable people around me, but it was for this 48-hour film contest that they have, this international competition. It was the first time I'd ever, and you know, it was funny at the time I was, the girl I was dating, she was like, I used to always talk about it because people who talk about what they're going to do are people that aren't going to do it. Like, don't sit here and tell me what you're going to do. Just do it. You know, just do it. Don't tell me what you're going to do. Just do it and then tell me what you did. So I would always talk about, you know, one day, you know, I bought this badass camera. I had this, you know, somewhat of some equipment. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I guess she just got tired of hearing it. She's like, when? When are you going to do it? You've been talking about it for a year or a year and a half. Like, when are you going to do it? And I was like, I don't fucking know. Like, I have been talking about it. She's like, you know what? Enter a contest. So then you're going to have to do it because you got only 48 hours to do it. And then you'll see. Then you'll see what it takes. So I was like, okay. So I entered this contest, and it was just going to be me and my buddy Cheese. Shout out to Cheese. He's been on the podcast twice.
What's up, Cheese?
Cheddar. And it was funny because I was like, it was just me and him. And I was like, dude, like, how the fuck are we going to pull this off? Like, you got one guy holding the camera. It's like, what? You're going to have just one dude behind the camera? And luckily, that contest had like a forum where you could like reach out to other people. And so I just put out a post and I was like, hey, I need help. Like, I need people. I need actors. I need audio guys. I need something. I need this. So one guy responded and he was like, hey, man, I'd like to be a part of your team. Let's meet up. I'm like, cool. And then he was like, hey, I'm going to bring like two other. He was an actor. He's like, hey, I'm going to bring like two other actors with me. I was like, cool. I'm like, shit, Cheese. Now it's me, you, and three. Now we got five people. So we meet up. And one of the people that he brought, this chick, she had a boyfriend. And he was a cinematographer. And so now we're like six people. I'm like, cool. And now I got a guy holding the camera. And then he knew a couple guys. And then all of a sudden, it was like eight of us. I was like, God damn. So we meet up at my apartment the night before. We're going to, because basically the way the 48-hour film contest works, so that no one can like prepare. They don't give you the genre. They don't give you like, you have to say a certain line in the film. There's like, you have to use a certain prop, and they don't give you that until like 7 p.m. on a Friday, and you have till 7 p.m. on Sunday to turn in the finished product.
Yeah,
which is ridiculous. You know what I'm 48 hours. So then we, you know, we get together and we get all the what we have to use, what line we have to use, what we have to do, and we're like trying to write this script. And that we're up to like 3 a.m. because we, you know, when you have so many people giving their input, it's kind of hard to settle on one thing, right? And finally we settled on something. The next day we shot that weekend. And let me tell you something, that was an eye-opening experience. Like, that really showed me, like, man, like, this is hard.
Filmmaking is very hard.
This has a lot of variables that I did not know existed. You know?
Tell me about it.
So, do you have an idea? Well, let me ask you this. Do you have any upcoming projects that you're...
Upcoming projects, anything could pop up. Right now, I'm working with this guy named Jay that I grew up with. He bought himself a Lamborghini.
Ooh,
so
nice.
So we're using him as a prop. So I got some gear coming in because eventually I want to make a short film and then make a feature film. But right now, I'm just going to get all the experience that I need. I'm getting some tools coming in so I can start mastering my craft because... I just want to make a nice short film, like a really crazy
something you're just like...
Something that I know about, what I went through in life.
But what's crazy to me is that with technology, with technology, you can make something that looks like it should be in a theater, right?
Yeah, actually, yes. But it takes money, a lot of money. Actually, you know, if you get investors to give you $1 million or $2 million, maybe $5 million, because a lot of it goes into distribution. You gotta pay for that. But without even
getting into that, I mean, I don't think it takes that much money just to like make a little short film, right?
Well, the movie Saw, they were like on a million, $2 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how much. Let me see. They were on a budget.
Right.
Really short budget. Let me see.
But look, I mean, this was like in the 90s when they did the Blair Witch Project, and that shit was like $20,000.
I did not like that one.
I thought it was terrible as well. But it made over $100 million, so there you go.
Okay, well, Saw was on a budget of $1.2 million. Just... To have. You know how much money they made?
Shit. I mean, that's a damn franchise.
Exactly, because what they did was from a story. If you know how to tell a story and you have all the pieces of audio, cinematography, story, trust me, with a good story, you can't lose.
No, you're right. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want it to look really, really shitty because then people are going to look away. But yeah, having that good story, it kind of allows everything to kind of fall into place, right? That's where it starts, right? That's why the first thing you do is you got to write the script.
It's right with the script and then the scheduling and then having investors to invest in you. Like I said, all of the saw it took $1.2 million, and now they, I don't know how many hundreds of millions they made from it. The profit of that, if you have a bright idea and a great story, and anything's the sky's limit.
So what's, I know you gotta take a piss as you mentioned.
Yeah,
earlier.
I gotta piss.
But I mean it's getting late, and we can go ahead and wrap things up, but. What message, like if you can kind of summarize your experience and kind of your epiphany and discovering this path, what do you think you would tell somebody who's, you know, maybe going down the wrong path, as you once were, as you once did, as I once did. So what's the message? What do you want to tell people? Like, hey, you know, take it from here.
See, when you're young. But when you grow up, you start maturing. You know, you're going to get to that point that you may be sick and tired of being sick and tired of the problems, the jail, the court fees, the courts, all this bullshit. So find something that you love to do, your passion, because everybody has a hidden gift, and it just has to come out. Like, I always wanted to do filmmaking, and I decided to jump up and try to do it, you know. So anything that you love doing, do it.
How long have you been doing it for?
I've been in film school since 2015, so I could say 5 years. But the pandemic right now, I was doing online, which I had to drop because I wasn't learning shit.
Right.
Really, you don't really learn shit in film school, to be honest with you. You learn more out here dealing with people that you go to film school and do projects with. Because in film school, I really don't learn too much. There's a lot that they don't show. You learn more on hands-on actually doing it. Yeah. But
go ahead.
But yeah, but 5 years I was doing it. But my thing to say is this, just don't give up, man. You know, it's never too late to go chase a dream. And it's a dream of mine, and I'm going to chase it. And it ain't for me. I want to make people laugh. I want to make them cry. I want them to be respected. I want them to feel good about themselves through pictures and video. You know, so never give up on anything. Just follow up. If you have a passion, get up and work on it.
Like you were saying, it's kind of like you're with film, with photography. It's kind of like you're giving people a little peek at your inside, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of your experience. Kind of it's a way of showing the world of, hey, like this is what I've been through. This is what. What I feel, it's an incredible tool to really explain your experiences, right?
Basically, man, it's all art. To me, it's art. So I'm gonna continue to chase a dream for the rest of my life. I don't want to do anything else besides. I'm not going back to the meat department. If I do, hey, it's just for part time. But full time is movie making. That's it. I'm going to let it kill me. I'm going to do that for the rest of my life. And I'm going to become a beast at it. I promise one day I'm going to create images and stories that people are going to be like, damn, it's going to come. My time is coming. And everybody else has their time too. So never give up on your dreams. Keep chasing it every day because, you know, it's all about effort. You put effort into it, anything's possible.
Hey, man, I believe it. Well, folks, I hope y'all enjoyed this episode, man. This is a man who's been through trials and tribulations, been to the bottom, and now look at him in such a short period of time. He's on stage with great rappers, and he's shooting music videos, and look, I mean, yeah, look at the man's work. The man's work speaks for itself. Just remember, guys, like, it doesn't matter what you're going through. It doesn't matter where you've been. That can just serve as a catalyst to kind of propel you into the future, right? You've taken those moments, and you're gonna use those to produce and create incredible art, right?
Yes, sir.
You know, everyone always says, you know, all great artists have been through a lot. Well, I know you've been through a lot, and your work is awesome.
And I appreciate it, Victor.
Certified Vision. Check them out. At Certified Vision on Instagram. Eric, a.k.a. Crook, a.k.a. the new Certified Vision. Thanks again, buddy.
Hey, man. Appreciate it. Peace and love, man. Your boys stay safe.
All right, folks. Y'all have a good one.
All right. Bye-bye.